This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. One of the longtime missions of high schools in America has been to prepare students for college. But today, only about 50% of high school graduates go on to a four-year college. What about the other 50%? We've heard time and again that they are doomed in the modern workforce, that no longer will a high school education cut it, and that those who don't go on to college will face lower wages and a lower standard of living for the rest of their lives. But now that thinking is beginning to shift. The global economy of the 21st century is going to require skilled workers, and not all of those workers will need college to obtain those skills. In fact, college may ill-prepare people for some of those skills. The simple truth, experts say, is that we have to have more options for young Americans, more career-oriented pathways from high school to jobs. We need to close the skills gap because our nation's economy depends on it. This hour, we talk to three people who espouse that philosophy and who have ideas on how to move toward this alternative education paradigm. Bob Schwartz is Professor of Practice Emeritus in Educational Policy and Administration at the Harvard Graduate School of Education. He took the lead in the university's 2011 Pathways to Prosperity report, which focused on meeting the challenges of preparing young people for the 21st century. He joins us in our Spirit Square studio. Welcome to the program. Welcome to Charlotte.
Thanks very much. Happy to be here.
Also with us is Dr. Bill Anderson, Executive Director of MECED. That's an independent nonprofit organization that sheds light on critical issues facing public education here in town. Welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Mike.
And Clifton Van is President of Livingston and Haven. That's a manufacturing technology business in Charlotte that is investing in the future talent pipeline. Thank you for joining us as well.
Thanks for having me.
What does Livingston and Haven manufacture?
Well, we're really in the hydraulics business, automation, lubrication, and connectors, things of this sort. We work with manufacturers really to help provide them the tools they need to be more efficient. So we're taking a lot of the component technology that are manufactured by other companies like Bosch, Rexroth, or Parker Hannifin, and we're producing, let's say we're baking a cake out of the sugar and flour and so forth for our customers.
Okay. You said the word automation, and automation is anathema to people who want a job, it seems to me. We'll talk about that as we go through here. Let's start with two big questions. One about people who don't go to college, and the other about the graduation rate. Let's begin with that. I actually was astounded that the graduation rate is 50% of high school graduates go on to a four-year college. Only 50% go on to a four-year college? Really? How long's that been going on?
Well, actually, the problem is not that the number who go on. In fact, it's closer to 70% go on to some form of post-secondary education, not necessarily a four-year college. But the big question is kind of who comes out the other end. And in fact, the reality is that only one young person in three by the age of 25 has a four-year college degree. Four out of 10 people who start four-year colleges drop out or don't complete within 6 years. The dropout rate, if you want to call it that, in two-year institutions is even worse than that. Bottom line is, as you suggested in your opener, that in fact, if you look at 25-year-olds and ask what proportion of them have either a four-year degree or a two-year degree or even a one-year post-secondary certificate, it's only about half, a little bit more than half.
Do we understand why that's going on? And is that particularly American, or is that happening around the world?
Well, a couple of problems here. I mean, one is that we have taken what I think is a really good idea, which is that all people need to have a solid enough foundation of core academic knowledge and skills to be able to have some choices and go on in the world. We've somehow allowed that idea to morph into the idea that, therefore, everybody needs to be prepared to go on to a four-year college and get a four-year degree. No other country has gone down that road. We are a real outlier in the sense of not having any formal system to prepare most young people for a successful transition from the end of schooling, whatever that is, into full-time employment. That's, at least as I see it, you know, our big challenge. We've allowed the academic goals of high schools to totally swamp what we used to think of as two other very important goals of high schools, career preparation and preparation for civic life. It's as if the academics only is the purpose of high school.
I'm going to paraphrase your report because I think it's in your report where you talk about how the higher educational institutions, colleges and universities, are kind of the tail wagging the dog on this thing.
Right.
Is that because they have a monetary interest in this, or is it simply because the goal has always been to be the first in your family to go to college, and or for everybody to ultimately go to college, because that said something about who you were and what you are?
No, I think that's right, that we have identified – I mean, this is – historically, higher education has been a kind of engine of social and economic mobility, and it's still true that when you look at the aggregate, the more education you have, the better off you are. However, what we're now beginning to see is – really quite differential returns based on what the skills are that you have, what the subject is you're studying, and what its relationship is to the labor market.
Well, that brings us to the second thing I talked about in the opening, and that is that for years, educators and others have been banging this drum and chanting the mantra that a person with a high school diploma is doomed to low wages and a low standard of living. Not true?
I don't. That isn't true, but I think if we go back and look at this historically, after World War II, college for all was the mantra. That was the drum that we banged. Mm-hmm. And that I think many of our guidance counselors for the past 30, 40, 50 years, that's what they feel is the right thing to do, that every child needs to go to college. And the reality is we have pushed a lot of students into a four-year diploma program without really thinking about why they're going to college. What are they going to earn? They're going to get a diploma, but is that diploma going to lead them to a job? And the reality today is there are many students who graduate from school, even though it's a small percentage, that come out and don't use that degree for their career. And as Bob has said in his work, there are other countries that are doing things quite differently. They're giving students, while they're still in high school, other workplace learning opportunities or internships or apprenticeships or job shadowing experiences that helps them make more informed decisions about the career path they may follow.
This sounds earth-shattering. I mean, this is a complete switcheroo from what we've been told all these years.
Yeah, I would I think the reality still is, I would say, that most people are going to need some kind of education or training beyond high school. For me, the big issue is the distinction between the sort of four-year post-secondary institutions and the more applied technical two-year programs. We were told, as you point out, that we were moving into a world in which there really were only going to be two kinds of jobs: high-wage, high-skilled jobs for which a four-year degree was the kind of absolute minimum, and then everybody else was going to be consigned to kind of low-wage, low-skilled jobs. The reality is that in companies like his and many others, there are really good jobs that require a strong technical foundation, but do not necessarily require a four-year degree. Maybe 30% of the jobs projected over the next decade are in this kind of category. So I'd still say to young people, you're probably going to need something beyond high school, maybe not necessarily immediately after high school, but I think in this economy, it's really hard to get ahead without some kind of additional preparation or training.
Clifton Van, you run a company. What do you look for when you hire people, young people, not just, 20-year-olds, 25-year-olds?
Sure. Well, we always like a foundation of engineering and education. But today's world is really a skills-driven world. And having skills and talents, things that you can physically do, are really important. So we look at somebody who might have a four-year electrical engineering degree from NC State. They have a lot of rote learning, but they don't have a lot of experience or application knowledge with the product. And so what we're finding sort of from an educational standpoint is a shift towards more of the community college, more of the application training. I liken it to having read a book about swimming versus actually having swam. Mm. And we're looking for young people who have that experience. So a lot of it comes from school, but also what is their background? Do they like to work on cars? Are they mechanically inclined? These kinds of things.
Help me understand this, because obviously back in Henry Ford's day, they were low-skilled assembly line jobs. You turned the same screw hour after hour, day after day. That was your job in building the car. Machines do that now. So the new people coming in are what? People who invent the machines? People who invent the programs that operate the machine? What are they? What are these skills that they have to bring?
That's correct. In a lot of cases, programming is a big one. When you think about just your daily life and how many times you come in contact with something that's been programmed, from the gas pump to the Netflix movie dispenser at the local grocery store, that's a job that somebody had to do. And so one of the things we see in the United States, for example, is that we are short of programmers to get all these machines to do what we want them to do. We have trouble finding those kinds of people.
And you don't care if a person comes to you with a college degree or not. Have you turned down a college applicant, a college degreed applicant, in favor of somebody who brings particular skills to the job?
Yes, more in terms of not so much against a college, 4-year college degree versus no college degree, but more of a 4-year college degree versus a 2-year technical degree. So 2-year technical degrees and applied sciences are really where we find the young people who are able to come into our business and be impactful very quickly.
We have two people who come from the educational world. We have Bob Schwartz, who prior to joining the Harvard faculty... Here's a guy talking about don't go to college, and he taught at Harvard. You were a high school teacher and a principal. You, Bill Anderson, you've been an educator for more than 30 years. You were a principal in the schools here. You were an assistant superintendent here. So when you were back in those days, what did you tell high school students and their parents about college or about life after high school? Is this a recent shift in your own thinking? Or
it actually is not a recent shift in my own thinking, and it's been a passion of mine since I was maybe 10 years into my teaching career. When I went for my master's degree to become a school administrator, I realized that there were many students in some of my classes that weren't going to be successful in college. And so my master's thesis was about looking at other states that used the community colleges where students could get some of these technical degrees. I came back with my report, shared it with my superintendent at that time, a fellow named Peter Relic, who said to me, "That's really nice, but we believe there's the diamond in the rough everywhere and that every child needs to have that opportunity to go to college." So I put it up on the shelf. I believe that this has been a challenge in America for the past 30, 40 years. And some of the things that some of our high schools are doing and some of the things that Clifton has done at his company, they have opened their doors for students while they're juniors and seniors to learn about what these jobs really are and to help them to make a decision about what career path they're going to take. Sometimes it's going to be a traditional school. Other times it may be the community college. And the community college is sometimes the very best path, but there's still some negative social pressures about going to the community college rather than going to a 4-year school. So we're fighting some of that as well. But the reality is, when students have these opportunities to go to a community college, to work in Clifton's company or other companies for a couple years, they're much more likely to make better decisions down the road.
What did you tell your students in high school?
Well, this is a long time ago, but my views have really evolved on this, I have to say. And I think I've been influenced more than anything else by seeing high-performing vocational systems in other countries that really serve a broad mainstream of kids. All over Northern Europe, between 40 and 70% of kids at age 16 are in programs that manage to combine high-quality academics, but in a much, much more applied fashion, as Clifton was saying. And when you see the impact on young people who are given the kind of support, moving into kind of an adult workplace, motivated, understanding that they're they're getting launched toward adulthood from adolescence, they're putting money in their pockets, there's just a kind of healthy youth development aspect to this that really is important.
I want to come back and talk about these other countries, among other things that are ahead of us in this thinking, when we come back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and My Fox Carolinas WJZY. Interactive, informative, and new, My Fox Carolinas is on TV, on mobile devices, and on the web at myfoxcarolinas.com. Well, jazz may be an American-born musical art form, but the world is celebrating tomorrow. They're celebrating jazz tomorrow. For 3 years, April 30th has been International Jazz Day, to celebrate the form's diplomatic role in uniting people in all corners of the globe. Jazz has certainly evolved since its beginnings and continues to do so and continues to influence other forms of music. So we're going to observe the day tomorrow with three local jazz aficionados here to talk about jazz in the Queen City, why jazz continues to be relevant, and more tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Department of Transportation warns that 63,000 bridges in the U.S. are structurally deficient. America's aging infrastructure and the push for congressional action.
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks, here on 90.7 WFAE, listener-funded public radio.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about life after high school and not necessarily taking a path to college, taking a different path. And it is kind of an earth-shattering change of direction, at least the admonition to allow kids to make that decision. Bob Schwartz is with us. He's professor of practice emeritus of educational policy and administration at Harvard University, a man who says, you don't have to go to college. Bill Anderson is with us. He's executive director of MECED, and Clifton Van is president of Livingston and Haven, a manufacturing company here in Charlotte. Not only do 50% of high school students not go to college or not complete a four-year degree, those that don't continue to fall behind students in the rest of the world. Why? If the rest of the world is not necessarily sending their kids to college, but these kids are getting better jobs and they're getting skills to get those better jobs, why aren't we doing that?
Well, that's a very good question. That's the question that we're trying to put on the table and get people to discuss and analyze. One fact while I'm thinking of it, which is that if you look at the, quote, the successes, that is the 25-year-olds with four-year degrees, roughly 40% of them are actually working in jobs that didn't require a four-year degree, and another small percentage are unemployed. So the old notion that a four-year degree automatically guarantees you kind of a economic return on that investment is now beginning to come into question. Again, though, I'd like to emphasize this isn't for me a question of college versus no college. It's what kind of training or education beyond high school makes sense for people. Right. If we're in a world where a third of the people with two-year degrees are out-earning the average four-year degree holder, which is what the reality is today, that should send some messages to families about choices.
Does this thinking cross political lines? Because in North Carolina, we have a governor, Governor Pat McCrory, who said not too long ago that he wants the state's colleges and universities to be more focused on getting their graduates into programs that will get them a job. If you want to study English literature and Jane Eyre, great, but most people should be focused on getting a job. Now, people will say that's a very Republican thing because jobs are very important and business is very important to Republicans. But this is also a European idea, which is anathema to a lot of conservatives. So where does this fall on the political spectrum?
Yeah, that's interesting. I actually think this is there really isn't a big political divide on this on this question. I leave it to my colleagues to talk about the politics of North Carolina. But essentially, I'm an old English major, I should say, right off the bat. I'm all for getting as much literature into people's heads as you can do. But I think the governors like this one are responding as much as anything to pressure coming from parents. I think parents are now beginning to see four-year institutions have a responsibility to at least help people think about what they're going to do after they graduate and to try to provide more opportunities for internships, for other kinds of activities that get kids some exposure to work in the world of work.
I would like to say that I see this as more of a workforce development issue, and that one of the advantages that the Europeans have over us is that they have public policy in place that requires government, businesses, and education all to work together. So they support this. Whereas in America, most of our businesses see supporting public schools as charity work. Buying a computer, buying a whiteboard, doing some volunteer work, being a lunch buddy. So it's a very different – it's a culture shift is really what we're talking about. And the culture shift is for American businesses to understand that this will help them close the skills gap.
As the third leg of this three-legged stool and a person in business, how do you feel about that?
Absolutely. What Bill said, I think it's an economic development issue. When you look at our ability to grow our business, our customers' ability to grow their business, it's about bringing talent in. In fact, I think it was on NPR a week or so ago, they were talking about German and European companies would spend $100 billion relocating their businesses to the United States because our natural gas had become so inexpensive. Mm-hmm. Well, you think about what they're going to want to find when they get here. They're going to want to hire talented people to fill those spots. If they can't find them, they may not stay. And so that concerns me from an economic development standpoint is how do we regrow our middle class? And part of that, I believe, has to come through manufacturing. But we've got to have the educational underpinning to make that happen.
Well, the middle class is beleaguered. And I'm curious as to how you really believe that this is the better pathway to building a stronger middle class than having everybody go to college.
I personally do. I think when you look at the history of our country, at one time, most people couldn't afford to go to college.
Right.
But they grew up working on a farm. They grew up working on tractors. They had skills mm-hmm. that they could apply in the workforce. And they did that. Education, as we've gotten more educated, we've moved away from some of those skill sets. And I think what we see in the German community and some of these other manufacturing-oriented communities is that they're still there. They still believe those skill sets are important. And their middle class has thrived more through these recent economic downturns than ours have.
Are colleges likely to retool in terms of refocusing their thrust so that kids leave school with these skills that Clifton Van is talking about and you've been talking about as well, Mr. Schwartz? Or is this going to be something that they're going to put a brick wall up for? Because, by gosh, we're a college, we're a university, we're an Ivy League school, we're Ivy covered, we're not changing anything.
I think there are relatively few institutions, my own being one, that you could argue are somewhat immune from some of these pressures. But we have over 3,000 higher education institutions. A lot of them really have to be sensitive to the market. And I think increasingly, as I say, parents are now starting to ask more and more questions about what's your graduation rate, but what happens to your graduates? How do they do? How are they faring in the labor market? We're now seeing companies springing up that are actually investing in building these databases to be able to answer those questions. And if you add into that fact that you've got with distance learning and other kinds of threats to the traditional academic model, I think colleges are going to have to be a bit on the, they're going to have to be more responsive than they have been to this question.
In your report that you wrote a couple of years ago while you were at Harvard, Pathways to Prosperity, Meeting the Challenges of Preparing Young Americans for the 21st Century, you say that large numbers of high school students dropped out because they felt their classes were not interesting and that high school was unrelentingly boring. They didn't believe that high school was relevant or providing a pathway to achieving their dreams. And you call this a silent epidemic that is undermining the very future of America. Are these students right? I remember sitting in class thinking, how am I ever going to use trigonometry? What a waste of my time. I remember sitting in that class. I remember sitting in other classes. Why do I have to memorize the date of the Magna Carta? Come on. But I was in high school. What did I know?
Now, first, by the way, the when you look at surveys of kids who have dropped out, over and over again, there are two things they say. One, high school is boring, and second, really relevant to this topic of conversation, kids say, I don't see the connection between what I'm being asked to study and any future I can imagine for myself. Yesterday at this conference that Bill hosted, that Clifton spoke at, mm-hmm. we had a couple of students, one from who was doing a work-based learning, kind of internship at your place. And just listening to the testimony of students, the power for them to be able to kind of see the relevance of what they've been studying in a real-world setting makes a real difference.
So is it a matter of changing the way a subject is taught so that the relevance is clear, or is it a matter of teaching something completely different?
No, I think it's both changing the way it's taught, but it's also providing more and more opportunities for young people to have some kind of experience while they're in high school of the real of the workplace. So they can begin to see the connections.
I don't think all the problems are in education. I think part of it comes from how do we prepare kids for education. And if you're like some of my friends and many others, I'm sure, you grow up, you go get a degree because your dad had that degree or whatever. And the first time you think about what you're going to do for a living is when you walk out of college with your diploma. And, well, that's probably not the best way to approach it. So trying to create passion in these young people is one of my jobs. And I think our plea today is to the community to open your doors for these young people, because they're making decisions based on very little information in many cases about what they want to do for a living.
So you're advocating, all three of you are advocating, I think, that high school students be given an opportunity to see the real workplace and actually be there and actually contribute to the real workplace.
Absolutely.
What, as interns?
As interns,
yes.
Sure.
And I think that Clifton's company has done that very well. Clifton saw some of his most seasoned veterans leaving him, and he had a skills gap, and he said, well, I'm just going to go out and hire some new workers. And he went out there, and they weren't there. So he started working with the local high school, which was Olympic High School. Mm-hmm. There is story after story of young people who are in his business now who are still in high school that didn't see high school as really relevant. They were just kind of floating through. And once they came to his company and they had some of these experiences, you saw the light go on. And they either went to the university, they went to the community college. The light just went on, and they have a much more clear career path than they would have had.
Give me an example of the light going on.
Well, I had a young lady in did an intern with us, and she thought she wanted to be in the medical field. Mm-hmm. And in spending months with us, weeks with us, she saw this water jet cutter that we use for making parts. She was fascinated by that. And that piece of technology alone got her to think, maybe I want to be in manufacturing. Maybe I want to look at something different. So it's clear to me that these young people come in. Number one, they're much more advanced than I was at that age. Number two, they think they know what they want to do, and they think they're pretty sure of it. But when they see other options, they begin to realize, wait, there's a lot of things out there for me. And I think when they find that passion, then education means so much more to them. It's relevant.
Are the kids who come to you and to other companies that hire high school interns for this very purpose of showing them a pathway to jobs and showing them the relevance of what they're learning in high school, are they paid internships? Are these students who are not doing well in high school?
No, these are paid internships, and these are students that, frankly, are doing well. In fact, one of the great things and services that MECED provides is the vetting process to try to find the right people for our business.
What about the kids who aren't doing well in high school, who may do well if they were to see the light?
Well, I think that there are some of those. Here's a reality check. We probably have 100-plus students in every high school that want an internship. In fact, one of the young women that was in our program yesterday said that I think what CMS should do is they should provide every senior a semester internship during their senior year. And we would love to do that. But the problem is the companies aren't there.
Huh.
We have a very small number of American companies. The European companies get this much more than the Americans, but the internships just aren't there.
So why do you get it?
Well, one, I did spend some time in Germany, so I work with a number of German companies as a distributor for them. I lived in Germany for 4 or 5 months and worked for a German company. So I got to see the value of training people at a very young age and creating a passion and then a pathway to success. And it was hard for me to imagine even at that age that people as young as I saw could engage in complex activities as they were, but it was clear that they were being successful. And I said, this is what we need to do in the United States.
Bill said that one of the – I'm sorry, go ahead.
We took a group of a dozen or so people from some of the states that we're working with to Switzerland for a week last spring at the invitation of the Swiss government to really look at the Swiss system. Two people in the group happened to be employers, one from IBM, one a senior person from a big private equity firm. People were really blown away both at the scale of the 70% of kids in Switzerland, 70% move into these programs that combine learning at the workplace and learning in classrooms. The programs span a very broad range of occupations, high tech as well as low tech, white collar, blue collar. We spent time at Credit Suisse where there were 750 what they call young professionals, 16 to 18 year olds, doing really adult things, but under a lot of supervision. Roughly a third of Swiss employers participate in these programs, and There are very credible cost-benefit analyses that show them that at the end of 3 years, the 16 to 18-year-olds have actually added more value to their bottom line in terms of productivity than it's cost them in wages and training costs. But this is a whole system that is organized around this set of principles. That is applied learning rather than academic learning for most young people. And there are opportunities for kids to continue to get their education. There's a whole university system for applied sciences alongside the more traditional classical university system. So it's scale is the issue for us. I mean, I think when Bill says, you know, in an ideal world, every kid who wanted it in high school would have some opportunity to have some extended workplace learning experience in a company like Clifton's with supervision. You could tell from the colleague of Clifton's who was there that kids who are lucky enough to be in his firm get a lot of attention and support and mentoring and coaching. And this is something that we really ought to be making available on a much, much wider basis than we're able to now.
Bill Anderson said that, you know, Clifton, you went out and when some people were – senior people were leaving you, went out to look for people with skills and you couldn't find them. That's pretty scary that they're not there in America.
Right.
But high school students don't have those skills either. So why not just take an adult and train them?
Well, in a lot of cases, it's hard to retrain them. And depending on the skill sets that they have, the other thing is we want to build the right soft skills in. And so the challenges that we see in business today are not just about the technical knowledge, but the ability to get along with people, to manage the soft skills, to show up to work on time, these kinds of reliability issues. So,
and you get this out of high school students?
Well, not necessarily, but we begin to train there because that's what we realize is that the next generation that we're going to be hiring are in high school today. Uh-huh. And if we're not addressing them, even in middle school, that it's going to be difficult to address them when they're in the workplace.
Right now, today, what kinds of jobs do not require a bachelor's degree, and what do those jobs pay?
Well, there are many jobs. In fact, the Labor Department released a report last year that 79% of all jobs do not require a four-year degree.
79%?
79%. That means almost 80% of our kids do not need a typical four-year degree to go get whatever job they might want to pursue. So it's quite a large percentage. In fact, it's the vast majority of them.
Is this going to get bigger in the future, or is that number going to stay pretty much the same?
Well, I think it really depends on the direction in which our economy heads. If it was up to me, we integrate more manufacturing into our economy, then I think the number will get bigger.
Huh. This must send shivers of fear through universities and educational institutions of higher learning.
I don't think so. And actually, University of North Carolina Charlotte is working very closely with Central Piedmont Community College in trying to develop some alignment. For instance, through engineering, CPCC now has a two-year program that if a student completes the two-year program, they transition just beautifully into UNC Charlotte. So I think that the university systems are under pressure now to do a better job with their completers. And so one of the things that they're doing is trying to figure out how can we help students be better prepared before they get to our school.
But we've been told that in the future, these rank-and-file jobs will be taken over by automation and that the real jobs will come from intellectual things, which would indicate you'd need a four-year college degree. You're saying that's not true.
Well, I think when you look at the empirical statistics, if you realize we have more student loan debt right now in the United States than we have credit card debt, when you know we like our credit cards, it would propose a couple of assumptions that maybe we've sent too many kids down the wrong educational path because they're bagging groceries at the local grocery store with $150,000 worth of student loan debt.
Which they'll never pay back if they're a grocery store bagger.
That's right.
We have to take a break. We'll come back and talk more about this. And I want to talk about tracks because it seems like you're talking about putting people on tracks to different pathways, which disturbs some people, I would think. We'll come back and do that. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the Charlotte Symphony. Christopher Warren Green conducts the Verdi Requiem featuring the oratorio singers of Charlotte May 2nd and 3rd at Belk Theater. Tickets at 704-972-2000. Well, there are some 63,000 bridges in this country that have been deemed structurally deficient. An aging infrastructure and the need for a new era in transportation policy, the topic of the Diane Rehm Show in 20 minutes here on WFAE. And if you'd like to join our conversation about life after high school and the career paths or the paths that high school should prepare young people to take. A great place to start is at WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks, and we are coming right back.
Hi, this is Steve Inskeep from NPR News. I'm thinking of that New Yorker cartoon where one person at a party turns to another person at the party and says, "And that's not just my opinion, it's the opinion of somebody on NPR. Next time you're at a cocktail party, you can be ready for some scintillating conversation if you keep up with the news by listening in the mornings to Morning Edition from NPR News.
Starting at 5, weekdays on 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about life after high school, not necessarily college, a career pathway in high school that takes you to a job. What a novel thought. With Bob Schwartz, professor of practice emeritus of education policy and administration at Harvard University and the author of Pathways to Prosperity, which is about this exact topic. Dr. Bill Anderson is executive director of MECED, and Clifton Van is president of Livingston and Haven. MECED says that many high school graduates are not college or career ready. How did they get out of high school?
Well, to graduate from high school, you just need to pass a certain number of courses.
But
to
they can't read or write, some of these people. How did they get out of high school?
I think that's a little overblown. I don't think.
Yeah, I've read some papers of young people who are in college, and they never saw a period or a comma that they liked.
I'm not sure how I can respond to that, Mike. I would like to think in the institutions where I worked that we weren't handing out diplomas to kids who couldn't read and write. But I do think that there are many students that graduate high school without having a clear idea about what they want to do.
Mm. Okay. Which leads us to this track thing. And you said something a little while ago that a former school superintendent, Dr. Peter Relic, who was here for 10 minutes and left, said that every student is a diamond in the rough.
Correct.
And isn't that a good way to look at that? Because we don't know what's going to turn a student on. We don't know what that magic button might be that suddenly they do see the light and they become this academic genius. We don't know.
I think it is good that there is a diamond in the rough, but I also think it's on business and it's also on education to provide numerous opportunities for students.
But I think all three of you, and this may have come from your paper, Bob Schwartz, you're saying that this should actually begin, this career pathway should begin not in high school, but in middle school.
Well, I want to be clear on this. I think in middle school we need to start providing all students, much more information about careers, much more exposure to careers, so to get them thinking about what's the relationship between my interests and strengths and what I'm going to do with the rest of my life and what are the education and career pathways that might lead me there. I am firmly opposed to tracking. Tracking is when schools make decisions about, you know, what Bill is really good at and what Clifton's good at, and Bill is not, you know, going to be a strong student, so we're going to put him in a sort of class for slower learners, and we're going to put Clifton in a class for faster learners. I'm for an untracked common curriculum up through the beginning of high school. Then I'm for designing, and that's the reason that we use the phrase pathways, then I'm for designing pathways that sit alongside the dominant pathway, if you will, that leads to four-year colleges. I'm for designing pathways that that have distinctive career focuses, all of which lead to some form of post-secondary education, and then letting kids and families choose. If kids and families are choosing based on information, it's not tracking.
But didn't we have this system in the 60s where some kids were tracked toward the college? They were college-bound.
Right.
Other kids were into what I think they called a distributive education or something like that, where they were being taught. They'd go and be in the shop, or they'd go to and learn how to repair cars, and that's where they were going to go after high school. They weren't
Those are, from my perspective, the bad old days that we're trying to move away from. And I think, frankly, one of the reasons that there's still a kind of stigma attached to anything that says career or vocational is because historically, too often, the schools divided kids into these two categories, and with a significantly less rigorous academic set of expectations for kids who were seen as, quote, not college material. Again, 90% of kids in high school these days, if you ask them what they're going to do after they leave high school, say they're going to college. 70% actually do go off to some form of higher education. But again, the big issue for us is if by age 25, only one in three actually have a four-year degree and another, you know, one in 10 have a two-year degree, that tells us something's off here. We're really missing the ball with roughly half of our young people.
How do these high school interns that you hire, how do you choose them? How do they choose you? Because maybe they decide they want to go to work for you. Why? What is it about you or what is it about them that makes a good fit?
Well, from the company's perspective, I think the simple fact that we'll open our doors might make us unique. But how do we choose them? And that's where really MECED and Olympic and local high schools that we plug into are big help, because we understand each other now. And so they know more or less what my business is and what the kinds of people we're looking for are. And we're not always successful in terms of making somebody a manufacturer, but we had a young intern come up. She came up to me the other day and she said, "Mr. Van, I think I've decided I want to be an accountant, not in manufacturing. And I was worried I was going to disappoint you." And I said, "Young lady, you're not disappointing me." I said, "This is what this is all about. It's about learning what you like and learning what you don't like."
Yeah, you can't decide unless you have options and you try them on. It's like trying on a pair of shoes.
And so we're not interviewing to hire. We're interviewing to expose and let people see themselves.
And I think that's one of the really great things that Clifton's company does, is that they allow students to see different parts of that business: IT, accounting, advanced manufacturing. Carolina's healthcare system does the same thing with the students we work with at Vance High School, where they go through 10 different stations where over a period of 6 weeks they see all the different parts of the hospital in their internship rotation.
But let's talk about that for a second, because some of the jobs that you have for these young people are not just running machines or helping others run the machines, because I'm sure you put adults with them. Some of these jobs are in accounting, they're in marketing, they're in front office departments. Aren't these college graduate kind of jobs? I mean, marketing and accounting? I mean, isn't that where you want to get your employees from in those fields?
Well, you know, I think the lines between what we used to call blue-collar and white-collar jobs are really blurring now. And we have kids who are in high school who have great experience with Photoshop and can do a great job in our marketing department. Now, long-term, we'd like for them to go get an extended education, but they can provide real value to our business today in support of our marketing team and doing things like Photoshop.
Let me share some things that have come in while we've been talking. David in Mooresville emails, "I'm not convinced by the skills gap rhetoric. I think many times it's used by employers who want a higher skilled worker at a lower wage, and they think they can get it because so many people are out of work. But in the long run, why should my kid get a two-year degree to become an engineering technician when she can make so much more money as a full engineer when she gets a four-year degree? I still plan to send my kids to college."
It's great.
I don't think
we're discouraging
anybody. Nobody would argue against that. But for some kids, at least, starting with an engineering tech kind of job, doing that for a while, and then making a decision, you know, am I ready? Do I really want to go on and get the next degree? That option should be there.
There's a young man that comes to mind that you had last year, who's now at CPCC, who, when he first came to you, he had no clue about an engineering career, but you kind of opened his eyes to it. He's on that two-year track at the community college and plans to go to the university.
Yeah, and that's one of the things we've been working on, is the flexibility of education, and so that, you know, if I don't know exactly where I want to be, I can plan in shorter time spans. So I can go get a two-year degree, and then if I find out, I want to go back and get my four-year, there's a path for that, a 2+2 that we've worked on to allow you to leave CPCC and go to UNCC as a junior.
Huh. And Mike, I think it's important to note that I don't think any of the three of us are against four-year college. Four-year college is very appropriate for many students, and we're not anti that. We just think we need to provide more pathways for other students.
And would I be wrong in saying that if you open these pathways up to a child who may not think that college is right for them, or they don't have the GPA that will get them to college, or they don't have the interest in academics that people who go to college need to have, that they see something in the workplace that turns them on and they realize, I got to get a college education to really do this, and that makes them work harder?
You know, it's that really came home to me. In the early 1980s, with other people, we started a program in Boston called the Boston Compact. And the idea was to kind of build an opportunity structure for city kids who raised their hand and said, "I've had it, I'm out of here, no more education." We built a kind of pathway for kids to go straight into the entry-level labor market in Boston. Most of the firms that participated with us were big firms that had tuition assistance programs. After you were there 6 months, you got support for tuition. A year later, an awful lot of those kids, once they got into a workplace and they saw why they needed more education, that they saw that the kind of job they were in was kind of dead-ended, they couldn't move up without more skills and more knowledge, then they got it. Then they got the message around motivation. That's great. That's a success story.
John emails, your guests are speaking to the value of skills and mentioned programming as an example, but this raises the question of outsourcing. There's a huge trend in business and technical fields to outsource a number of skills offshore to low-wage countries. Assuming this practice will continue to grow, how are job prospects for young and older degree holders affected?
I think in our Charlotte region, we have many, many opportunities for students in the field of information technology. We have many opportunities in the field of healthcare services. We have many opportunities in advanced manufacturing. These are jobs that are not going to be outsourced. And we have people that are moving to Charlotte who have those skills, where we would love for some of our local kids to have some of those jobs.
Well, I think we see a change in that trend of outsourcing, too. Not only do we see U.S. businesses coming back to the United States for various reasons, but we also see call centers. We have a lot of banking here in Charlotte. Call centers are coming back because language barriers, time differences, responsiveness to the customer has been an issue. So I think we will see that become more indigenous again to the United States.
Jensen emails, first, what about the disappearance of technical classes at the high school level, like auto mechanics or masonry? How are school boards missing this point or statistic of 50% not getting an advanced degree?
I'm happy to speak to that. I think that one of the challenges our local school districts face is that they don't have the infrastructure, nor do they have the money to support the programming, to support the instructors. Things change so quickly that if we could use folks like Livingston and Haven and Siemens and the companies that are a part of Apprenticeship 2000 to open their doors to the real relevance of the marketplace, that makes so much better economic sense. I don't think CMS can afford it or afford to keep up with teachers or with machines and all the things that are happening.
David in Charlotte emails, deja vu again. Back in the 90s, I was a high school principal in Alabama. Our district was adopting Tech Prep, technical preparation, a federal program to increase technical skills of students. Tech Prep prepared all kids for either college or technical school. That is a high standard. Guess where we came to visit the best example of Tech Prep in the United States? North Carolina. Unfortunately, North Carolina has tested away Tech Prep. Sad, time we brought it back.
I think we agree.
Okay.
The important point about Tech Prep, though, is that it really did link high schools and two-year community colleges. And I think that's a big part of the message here. I would argue, in addition to the point Bill made about whether CMS can afford to invest in the kind of machinery you need, you've got this community college system here is really very, very strong. And building programs that enable kids to get started on community college while they're still in high school, take advantage of the facilities and the instructors that you've got here, I think makes a lot of sense.
And it's also, we should probably note that our superintendent and the president of the community college, Tony Zeiss, they get along better than ever right now. And I think more of that, those agreements are taking place where high school students are actually going to be taking courses at Central Piedmont.
Sam and Charlotte, if I could make one change to the high school curriculum, I would nix literature in at least one semester in ninth grade and one in 10th and teach kids grammar. And I'm with him, by the way. Teach kids grammar and writing through a copy editing style course. I hated English, he says, and literature as taught in high school. What I thankfully found and loved was writing and copy editing in the journalism school at college. AP style is simple and makes people disciplined with their writing and grammar. Assignments are compartmentalized within news stories. It's constant practice and fun with current news. That's a skill that we haven't talked about, but that is a necessary skill, is it not, yes, in the business, to be able to communicate?
Absolutely. Back to the soft skill thing. I mean, sometimes we just look at the technical side of it, but it's the ability to relate to people, to communicate with people, to show up to work on time. These things are really, really critical.
And to be able to write.
Absolutely. That communication piece is absolutely necessary.
It's important to note that the Common Core standards are doing just that.
But we want to do away with Common Core.
Some people want to do away with the Common Core standards, not all.
Not us. Quick comment, if I can, on this. This comes back to an earlier point. Right around the time our report was released, there was a little academic study called Academically Adrift that looked at 2,400 kids in four-year institutions, 32 different institutions, some highly selective, some less selective. The question, when they walked in the door, the kids were administered a performance kind of test that tested critical thinking, critical writing, analytic skills, the kinds of things that we think independent of what you study in college. This is what you should be getting from college. Mm-hmm. They administered another version of that same assessment at the end of sophomore year and then again at the end of senior year. 45% of the kids showed no significant improvement in those core academic skills after 2 years of college. The good news was it was down to only 35% that showed no significant improvement at the end of 4 years. The reason for the title of the study, Academically Adrift, was that at least the researchers came to the view that these were kids, too many kids were just drifting into college without any clear purpose. Social life of college kind of overtook the sort of academic side. Mm-hmm. And this helps, I think, contribute to this, the fact that so many young people with four-year degrees are really floundering in this labor market. This comes back again to more information, more opportunities for kids to get exposed to careers, to actually make intelligent choices about why they're going to college, what they're going to study, and what they're going to do with it afterwards.
Clifton Van, I think that you said that you went to get these high school interns because you found out that there were no skilled workers available, so you thought, well, we'll train them from the get-go. But you've also said, I believe, that high school graduates don't have the critical thinking skills that will be necessary in the future. Why do you suppose that is, and how do you overcome that in the workplace?
Well, again, I think, it's exposure. Young people today, and I have three little boys at home myself, and they're not exposed to the same things I was growing up because things have changed. So you don't work on the farm tractor, and you don't help dad change the oil on his car anymore, and things are much more hermetic, And so I think we've lost some of those skill sets over time that we need to go back and retrain, not necessarily for the sake of fixing dad's old car, but the idea of that these skill sets are valuable in the workplace.
Clifton Van is president of Livingston and Haven, Dr. Bill Anderson's executive director of MECED, and Bob Schwartz is professor of practice emeritus in educational policy and administration at Harvard University, where he doesn't want you to go. Pathways to Prosperity, Meeting the Challenges of Preparing Young Americans for the 21st Century, the name of the paper that prompted much of this conversation. Thank you all for the hour. Appreciate it.